The legal standoff between Apple and the FBI over access to the phone of one of the San Bernardino shooters is just the latest debate over privacy versus security since 9/11. Dr. Skyler Forster, the Bryn Scowcroft Professor of National Security Studies at the U.S. Air Force Academy, will be speaking Monday evening at the Donald Catt Institute for Constitutional Studies at SUNY Ulster, where he will address crime versus terrorism and other related topics, including Apple versus the Justice Department.
It's a tough issue, and I think there's a whole lot of technology that most of us don't know about it. So I'm not sure that I come down on one side or the other, but I lean in the direction of Apple. Not because the issues aren't important on the other side, but the notion that this is simply a one-off case, that we're going to take a look in this one phone and that's all there's going to be, is a problematic proposition. It really opens up a whole threat to the privacy of information that people are carrying around inside their phones all the time.
Your address at SUNY Ulster will involve the difference between war and crime. We think of war, I think, as foreign. We think of crime as domestic. But those lines are blurring quite a bit now, aren't they?
Oh, they are. They are. That's going to be one of the major themes, and I'm really thrilled to be there. The Catt Institute has done a wonderful job of bringing some of these issues to about the Constitution to the people of the Mid-Hudson Valley. We used to think of war as something we went somewhere else to fight, and our militaries fought them, and there was a big black line between, as you say, foreign and domestic, between military forces over there and civilian people over here. And, I mean, we used to treat terrorism as a law enforcement issue, as crime, until 9/11, and then we made a game change in our paradigm shift in the way we thought about it. But it is now domestic and foreign. It is both criminal and issues of international war and peace, and all the legal boundaries, all the constitutional boundaries really get blurred, and we haven't figured out how to think about them yet.
And I think we also think of terrorism as always being violent, but perhaps cyber crimes, attacks on power grids, etc., they're not necessarily violent, but they are terrorism.
Oh, well, they may or may not be terrorism, depending upon one's definition of them. They're certainly disruptive and destructive. I mean, these are forms of attacking a society. And for the United States, we have enjoyed pretty much invulnerability. I mean, I'm a creature of the Cold War, and I grew up doing duck and cover and worrying about Soviet missiles on our heads. But we weren't worried about armies invading American shores. 9/11 was really the first time the heartland, the continental United States, got attacked by somebody. And now we think about cybercrime, and now we think about lone wolf terrorist attacks. This is a whole different way of thinking about things. It may or may not be terrorism. It could be simply state destruction of somebody else's assets. So we can argue whether the word is terrorism or simply some other form of getting at a society for political or commercial or criminal purposes. But it certainly does hit the United States where we live.
How much liberty have we given up as a nation since 9/11?
I think we've given up a lot. We've given up a lot in terms of the latitude to do things. I mean, certainly in matters of convenience. But we have given up a lot in terms of the state's ability to surveil what we do, what we say, the technology. Remember, 9/11 is the post-9/11 period has also coincided with an explosion of virtual communication technologies and we live in clouds and all our data are in the cloud. It isn't something that's locked up in a key in your house anymore. And public opinion has said, yes, it's okay to get at this. Apple, to come back to your first question, you know, Tim Cook is not going to win in the court of public opinion. He may win in the courts. He's not going to win in the court of public opinion because we are still in this mode, particularly after Paris and San Bernardino, where our preference is to protect ourselves from some unnamed threat to us, and give live civil liberties are things that we pay less attention to. So it really is a balancing act within public opinion.
If someone had told you on September 12th, 2001, that this nation would go more than 15 years without another major attack, would you have believed them?
I didn't think that another one like that was inevitable. And if you say, and you're saying a major attack like 9/11, you know, with 3,000 casualties in the United States, I mean, that was, you know, we hope that was unique. It isn't that we're free from terrorism, but those kinds of operations are really hard to plan. The Boston Marathon attack, people would still consider that major. It certainly had a psychological impact. And even San Bernardino had a psychological impact. Fort Hood, Texas, had a psychological impact. So it wasn't in the scale in terms of the destructiveness of it, but certainly we have had attacks. We've done pretty well. One doesn't know entirely, but we've done pretty well in stymieing many attacks. And intelligence capabilities and security apparatuses are better attuned and know more how to watch for these kinds of things. So that's good. And so I'm not saying that privacy trumps surveillance all the time, but it is this fine line of how much is enough. How far do we go? Because it's an open-ended, if it's an open-ended slate, if you say security is the preference here.
Europe certainly has its own security forces and its own intelligence, but why do they have a situation like Paris, and we have not had a situation like Paris, say, in an American shopping mall or theater somewhere?
Oh, that's a very good question. In some respects, well, there are two things. One, Paris is just like the World Trade Center was an iconic target. Paris is also an iconic target. But remember, Paris was also, I'm going to put this in quotes if I can do that on the radio, Paris was also was more homegrown in the sense that the people, I mean, they were Belgian, but there were Muslims who were resident in Europe who had been there for some time, who were inspired to do this, but it wasn't some foreign attacker coming in from the Middle East, like Al-Qaeda and 9/11, that this reflects a domestic issue that is much more acute in many European cities than it is in the United States, and that is large Muslim immigrant populations, or even native-born but first, second-generation Muslim populations, who have basically been, feel like they've been left out. That they come from the suburbs of Paris, they come from the suburbs of Brussels, they are not enjoying the benefits of a globalized society. They feel discriminated against and segregated within their own societies. And you have a young generation post-2008 that is unemployed, underemployed, not very well educated, no stake in the system. And now someone is, through the internet, giving them a reason to blame somebody else and a vehicle by which they can express that anger. And I think that problem is more acute in Europe than it is, I mean, think back to the 2005 riots in Paris in the banlieue. That is a much more acute problem in Europe than in the United States. It's not absent in the United States, but it's much more acute there.
Dr. Skyler Forster, the Bryn Scowcroft Professor of National Security Studies at the U.S. Air Force Academy, we'll be speaking Monday evening at the Donald Catt Institute for Constitutional Studies at SUNY Ulster. There's more information available at sunyulster.edu.